Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Campus Firewatch Radio here on Radio at Firehouse.com. My name is Ed Camo. I'm the publisher of Campus Firewatch. And this month, we're going to be looking at a DHS grant that was awarded to the People's Burn Foundation to develop a real cutting-edge campus fire safety education program. So we brought together three people who are working closely on this project. We're going to be starting out with Sean Longrich, who's the executive director of the People's Burn Foundation, Dan Jones, who's the fire chief from Chapel Hill Fire Department down in North Carolina, and Kendari O'Connor from MediaSauce, who's the director of this production and also wrote the script for it. So we're going to be talking all three of these people today, just getting a real great overview of this project and what's going to be coming out in a few months. But first, we'd like to start with Sean. So thanks for joining us today, Sean.
Thanks for having me, Ed.
Sean, what I'd really like you to do is probably explain to everybody, first of all, why campus fire safety? Why was this topic something that you selected in the first place? And then maybe go over the process of what we've been going through and putting this all together.
Okay. Well, and I need to back up to a grant that we received last year, not this current grant that we're going to speak about. But in that grant, that was the first program that the foundation launched on a national level for adults, for community programming, and for high school students. And what we were trying to do was fill the gap in education. When the subject matter expert team came together, as they were discussing that, they started talking about college and how we were missing that group. So what we tried to do was backfill and say, okay, well, let's just throw a little chapter in there for college students. And what happened was we realized that there was absolutely no possible way that we could water that down because it encompassed so much in terms of messages. So we just said, okay, we'll just put that on the back burner. We'll apply for another grant next year, and hopefully we'll be successful. Unfortunately enough, we were. So in this process, what we've done with this current grant is we have brought a subject matter expert team together. And prior to doing that, prior to bringing all of those great minds to the table, what we thought was necessary, and Ed, you and I worked on this together, was to get a real feel for the college campus mind, for the college student's mind. I conducted the very first focus group here at Ball State in Indiana, and was really quite blown away by the attitudes of the students. You know, when I heard things like, well, we don't use the internet, or we don't use email, I think that's what it was, you know, in terms of messaging. How can we get this information to you? Well, we don't watch TV. We don't have cable. We use our phones. We don't like scare tactics. I didn't like that documentary about burn injuries. You're trying to scare me. You know, that kind of attitude, I walked away from that thinking, how will we ever be able to educate them? And so that's when you and I started working on it and came up with an outline for focus groups. And, you know, you kind of took off and took care of the East Coast, and we focused a little bit more here in the Midwest. And it was an amazing process, even, you know, taking the focus group into Second Life. And for those that don't know about Second Life, if you're my age or Ed's age, it's truly an eye-opening experience, was it not, Ed?
It was rather unique, shall we say.
it truly was. But what we learned in that, and, you know, we were able to ask questions of the college demographic from students all over the country. And what we learned was that they don't know anything and haven't learned anything since Stop, Drop, and Roll. And, you know, when you pose the question to them or make the statement, well, if you have to stop, drop, and roll, something went wrong in the beginning, so that's not prevention, then there's that wow factor, that aha, you know, when the light bulb goes on. But what we really found, and what I found extremely interesting, was that when we did open conversation in focus groups, they were very receptive on their level to wanting to know how it is to prevent fires and to prevent burn injuries. So that's when we said, okay, who can we bring to the table? Who are the great minds that have covered the college campuses for years, who have been involved in some of the devastating experiences and have learned from them? and that really work in the trenches, that are really close to the issues and the problems. So we brought together a national team, Dan Jones being one of them, and we have on that team Carol Higgins from Butler University, who studies millennial students. So her input to all of this has been tremendously helpful. But in any event, that's kind of where we are. The subject matter experts sat down and we came up with a list of issues that really needed to be targeted with the college demographic, ways that they start fires. And one of the big things that we talked about and that we know about is that a lot of fires begin at a party, or because of a party, or because of carelessness, or because of combinations of things like alcohol and smoking, or alcohol and candles, or just a candle. But beyond that, there's the problem of, if there is a fire, what are you going to do? How do you get out? Do you have working smoke detectors? So the program that we put together, and I don't want to take the steam out of Kendari's message here because I'd like for him to address what's been done, but what we've created virtually is a Hollywood production that will truly target a college student, that will pull college students in to this whole universe of burn and fire prevention.
And I think the great thing about the subject matter expert team that we're able to assemble is really the diversity of backgrounds that we have there. I mean, we've got fire chiefs like Dan Jones, and we've got campus fire officials and academic people like Carol Higgins that you had mentioned, and burn prevention specialists, and just a real host of people that I think really gives us that diversity we need in terms of looking at this from so many different points of view.
Oh, yeah, and even insurance carriers that cover Greek housing. I mean, I do think that we were extremely successful in bringing it in. It's not as though we have a very small, select group of people with one focus. It's tiered, and it's just phenomenal.
And this is an opportunity, too, to really build on the expertise you've gotten out of Tehellenbach 1 and 2. I mean, this is the third iteration of the project that has now expanded into the world of college fire safety, but the first two have been incredibly successful for you, haven't they?
They have been extremely successful, and that's in large part due to the fact that we created programs that the firefighters needed. And we didn't decide they needed them. The experts within the fire service, the firefighters, decided that they needed them. So they have a want. They have a craving for them. And in all actuality, when I go back 2 years, there were, after the building on the success of Tehellenbach 1, we had many, many, many inquiries from fire departments and firefighters throughout the country saying, hey, could we take this? We've got problems at a college, university, or at a campus that we're covering here. Is there any way that we can take this documentary to them and show these kids what can happen to them? So really what we've done is we've created a toolbox for fire officials and public safety educators to use to fill gaps in education. And as we all know on this call, and hopefully those that are listening, we've got a huge gap. We have no education for the college demographic. So if we look at the success of Tehellenbach 1 and how that the firefighters found that Tehellenbach 1 and 2 to really fill their needs and fill those gaps in education, what happens is they become the army and the foot soldiers to carry these messages, because this tool is something that they will be able to use in areas that aren't necessarily covered by a fire chief on campus.
I mean, you really hit the nail on the head with your word there, gap, because that's one thing we really found out of all these focus groups was when they were young, they got stop, drop, and roll on Sparky the dog, and they had a great sticky message, but then it stopped.
Mm-hmm. They haven't been educated since they were 9 years old. You know, one of the dynamics that I work with on a daily basis is that parents have not taught this education. They've always thought that, hey, kids learn it in school. Well, education is generational. If you don't teach your children, how are they going to teach others? Mm-hmm. And many parents just didn't know to teach it. They were lucky. You know, nothing happened in their life. They never thought it was going to happen to them. Why worry about it? And quite frankly, it's so simple that it's boring.
Mm-hmm.
And I have heard that over and over again and over again. As much as we teach prevention, I have people rolling their eyes at me all the time. And it's like, wait a minute, you don't understand. You may only get one chance to escape. And if you've only got that one chance, why wouldn't you want to know what to do and how to do it the right way?
That's really part of the challenge with this demographic, is making it interesting and appealing to them, because, yeah, their perception of it, it's kind of kiddie stuff.
I don't need to know.
Yep.
I think that's what one of them said to me. In doing all of the research of this generation, I think you and I talked about it. You know, there was an article in Wall Street Journal not long ago, and I was reading about the ELCs, and I'm like, what are the ELCs? The entitled little creeps. I'm thinking, how? I don't know that I want to go that far, but when we look at this generation and how they learn through technology and what their level of expectation is for messaging, it is so far beyond anything that you and I or any of us can even comprehend because we didn't learn that way.
Right.
We didn't have YouTube and MySpace. We didn't have that.
And their attention span is so short because of things like YouTube and everything where they just get everything in such short snippets.
Absolutely. And I just read an article about this just last week with kindergarten students and prevention. We don't have programs that are longer than 6 minutes. We're doing the same thing with college students. What's that tell you?
Well, we did learn a lot out of that study, and it's available on both our websites, and we'll have links to it on the page here below. But if you go to peoplesburnfoundation.org or campus-firewatch.com, you can download the copies of that study, which not only outline what we learned through our survey process, but also in terms of what they know, or probably more importantly, what they don't know, but also what Sean was just talking about, how they get their information today, and what are some effective techniques for reaching out to these students. So really a great study. Appreciate the People's Burn Foundation for undertaking that and making that happen, because it's really, I think, I'm not familiar with anything else like that out there, so I think it's a great source of information for everybody.
Thank you, Ed.
Well, thank you. And we've been talking with Sean Longrich, who's the Executive Director of the People's Burn Foundation. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back here on Campus Firewatch Radio on radio@firehouse.com.
Radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Okay, we're back here on Campus Firewatch Radio, and joining us now is Dan Jones, who's the Fire Chief of the Chapel Hill Fire Department. Thanks for joining us today, Dan.
How are you doing, Ed?
I'm doing just fine. Dan has a pretty tragic experience, really, when it comes to campus fire safety. He's the fire chief down in Chapel Hill, where they have the University of North Carolina, and in 1996 they lost 5 students down there in the Phi Gamma fraternity fire, which was really a turning point for fire safety in the country when it comes to campuses, because that really focused a lot of the attention on it, not only in Chapel Hill, but across the nation. But it's an ongoing sort of thing, isn't it, Dan? It's not something that you can just say, okay, we've got it licked. You know, you have to keep coming back time and time again, don't you?
You really do, Ed. Each one of these incidents that happen has just a dramatic effect on the community, the campus that it occurs on, and the news media will focus on it for a few days, and every parent in the country who has a child away at school says, oh, that's terrible to have that happen to your child that's away at college where you think they're safe. But then it fades, and that opportunity that we have to try and make some progress or to educate people is actually a pretty short window, and most of those windows are opened by tragedy, and then they're closed again by the rush of information in our lives. And so when you take an incident like we had here in Chapel Hill in May of 1996, as you said, Ed, that was sort of a turning point, but part of that was the drama of the situation. The fire occurred on a Sunday morning. It was graduation day for the University of North Carolina. It was Mother's Day. It happened to be a slow news day nationally. We're within 2 hours of New York and Washington, D.C., so the national media was able to get here pretty quickly. And we captured headlines for about 4 days on network news with this fire. That's a tremendous opportunity. But the problem with it is it fades. Mm-hmm. And we see right now, as you and I have been talking, Ed, the tragic beach house fire involving college students in Ocean Isle, North Carolina, where 7 students from University of South Carolina and Clemson died last weekend. The news media is focused on it right now. It has people's attention, but it will fade. And so for those people who are truly concerned about this issue, and it is an issue, it's a much more serious issue than many people want to give it notice for, this is another one of those opportunities. It's another moment when we can educate not only students, but their parents, university administrators, local government officials, code officials, as to how much of a problem this is and the kind of steps that are necessary to protect these kids.
Now, earlier you and I had been talking, and you'd mentioned there was some very eerie parallels between this fire and the one you had back in 96. Maybe you could chat about those a little bit.
There are, and they are born of common themes that we see in a number of these multiple fatality fires involving college students, whether on campus or off campus. The Phi Gamma Delta fire in 1996 and the Ocean Isle Beach House fire just this last week, both of those fires involve multiple fatalities of college students between the ages of 18 and 22. In both cases, they were partying. It was not a wild type party. It was a friendly, relaxed type party. It involved cooking out. It involved a relaxed atmosphere. It went on to the wee hours of the morning. In both cases, students admit that there was drinking involved. So students who needed to have their full faculties of awareness in order to escape these kind of fires were impaired, which really restricted their ability to respond appropriately when faced with a crisis. In both cases, it involved a multiple-story building where fire was fed by a stiff breeze and combustible construction, where you got just tremendous fire spread in a matter of minutes that limited people's opportunity for escape. It's just the similarities are eerie, but it's not unique to these two fires. These are common themes that we see in fires all across the country.
And I think the point to make on this, too, is, you know, we might call this off-campus, but it wasn't even really off-campus housing. It was a vacation home. One of the students' family owned it. But I think the
That's true, Ed, but one point that I think we need to have the listeners be aware of is that this beach house was very similar to off-campus housing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a large residence designed and falls under the code as a single-family residence, but in reality it had six bedrooms.
Right.
It could house a large number of people, and it's just so very similar to off-campus housing that we see.
And I think the point to make, too, is that we may talk about student fire safety or campus fire safety, but it's not something that's just limited to the campus. It's not like once you go off campus and you flip a switch in your brain and you don't have to think about this stuff anymore. I think this fire tragically demonstrates that no matter where you are, there are things that you need to know and you need to be ready to do.
Absolutely. These are survival skills. They're useful to you wherever you are, whatever activity you're involved in, wherever you're staying. And I think Sean made a very good point in talking about this demographic, this person between the ages of 17 and 24. They're open to the possibilities of the world. They see things differently than all the rest of us see it. They have a sense of invincibility that is difficult to overcome with a message of safety. They're out there looking for adventure and for fun, and they're learning and trying out new things. And none of that is conducive to reception of a message of safety or caution. And so, as Sean characterized, it's very difficult to reach these youngsters with that kind of message. And you see it, interestingly enough, we went through a process here, and I had been warned about this by some fire officials from other campuses that had fatalities. When we had the Phi Gam fire, for probably two into the third year following that fire, we had tremendous cooperation from students here. The fire safety awareness of students at the University of North Carolina was tremendous. Student government even created a campus fire safety subcommittee of their student government. The student body president and I became close colleagues on working on some things together. But as that student body changed out and they graduated and moved on, and the lessons of that tragedy moved on with them, we got a whole new body of students. And the fire is only a story in the history of the university. And once again, they're difficult to reach. And we're right back to where we were prior to the fire. So it's not a situation where we can deliver the message and consider the job done, because it not only is the audience constantly changing, but as the study shows, the methods we have to use to reach that audience are constantly changing, and we need to be aware of that.
That was one of the things I was going to ask you. I mean, you know, that study was a snapshot. We looked at what it's like today. You've been dealing with these students for quite a few years now. Are you seeing that sea change in terms of how students get information nowadays and how they react to these kind of situations?
We do. The approach of a traditional fire safety video with some of the scare tactics that Sean alluded to and some stern messages from authority figures, those worked 15 or 20 years ago. Those don't work anymore. You show that type of educational media to a student group now, you get snickers, you get yawns, you get people looking at the clock. They're looking for a way to get out of this. So we need to find a way to communicate them in terms that they can relate to, scenarios they can relate to, circumstances they can relate to. And one thing interesting that I think all of us have discovered is that kids this age are very, very loyal to their friends. And if you can reach them with a message that makes them think about their friends and protecting their friends or helping their friends, that message gets through. That's a very strong connection for them. And I think this project does just that. It puts it in those kinds of terms that the kids will understand.
And one of the other things that we kept coming back to in that study, too, if you remember, Sean, was we kept asking, we said, and we used the video as an example, what would you do with this? And they said, well, if it's compelling, if it's interesting, if it's funny enough, we will tell our friends. And that's how everything works today, is viral. You tell one person, hopefully they tell 10. And hopefully they tell another 10 to get the message out there. We really rely on these viral things to spread the word more than just Dan Jones standing there talking before a group of 40 students.
The difficult part of that whole process, you know, when they started talking about, well, it has to be fun, it has to, you know, it really has to grab us. When the kids broke up, and I keep calling them kids, young adults, when they broke up into focus groups and they came back with ideas, one of the first ideas was two firefighters coming down a pole naked. I'm like, okay, what's that going to do? That would grab our attention. And the other one was, well, how about somebody smoking at a gas pump with a cigarette and it explodes?
Right.
The only thing that told me was that they do not understand the consequences. And I think that's why the Taiwan Back programs have been so successful. We show you the reality. And if they would be open and receptive to the reality, then most people, it's caused them to want to seek knowledge on how not to be engaged in that reality.
One of the interesting things, Ed, with the To Hell and Back series is firefighters, as you know, are a very cynical audience as well. They're hard to reach with messages sometimes about safety and so forth. They're very adventure-seeking. They're very cynical. But the training messages in To Hell and Back and the way they were presented have had a very, very positive effect on firefighters and has reached out and grabbed that audience and made them pay attention. So this approach, I think, will have the same positive effect with college students. And if it does, then we'll be able to make some progress.
Well, we've been talking with Dan Jones, who's the fire chief of the Chapel Hill Fire Department. Dan's given us some great insight in terms of the demographic that we're dealing with and also just how things have changed and haven't changed. In 1996, Dan had the unfortunate fire down there that killed 5 students. And he's able to draw some parallels to the very recent fire that killed 7 students out at Ocean Beach Isle in North Carolina. So we thank you for joining us here today, Dan.
It's my pleasure, Ed.
And we have our final guest with us today here on Campus Firewatch Radio, Kandari O'Connor from MediaSauce. Thanks for joining us, Kandari.
Hey, Ed. How's it going?
All right. Kandari was the director of the video that we've been shooting for this project, but he was also intimately involved in writing it. Well, I shouldn't say intimately involved. You were the author of the treatment and the script on this. And we've been talking about the demographic that we have to deal with today when it comes to students and how they're a lot different from when Sean, Dan, and I were in college age and growing up. And so as part of this whole process with the subject matter expert groups and everything, we had to come up with a pretty different way of reaching out to these students. So maybe, you know, Kandari, you can talk a little bit about your thoughts behind putting this story together, because I'll admit, when I first saw the script, I just said, no. It's certainly not your traditional fire safety video, and you did bring me around. It is dramatically different from anything we've seen in the past, so maybe you could talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, when we first started looking at ways to reach this target audience, you have to think about all of the possible things that can make someone different and then try and figure out what's the same about your entire audience, which is pretty difficult because, I mean, you can go to the local Cineplex and look at the list of movies and you'll probably not find more than 5 or 6 people who are all going to agree on which movie they would most prefer to see. because some people like comedies, some people like epic adventures, some people like action movies or horror movies or sci-fi movies, and the way they watch those also differs. If it's going to the theater, if they don't care that much and they just want to watch it at home, if they watch it on their PSP or their iPod or even just on the internet. So trying to find a way to really connect with such a large group of people was, I think, by and far our greatest challenge. So we really turned to storytelling in its most basic form. I mean, storytelling is a universal absolute that humankind has shared as long as our history can remember. I mean, the only reason that we have our history is because it's the stories we've told about our past. You know, whether it's watching a movie or it's reading a book or reading a blog on the internet or having a barbecue with your friend, it's one of the main ways we communicate. So when we looked at, you know, the way to reach these people and kind of open their minds and really their hearts to understand and have an interest in understanding more about fire safety and prevention, we decided that the best way to go about it would be to give them a compelling story that was real to them, that was, you know, as you were saying earlier, about friends, girlfriends, loved ones, the people you care about and the things you care about. You've got to get people to see something that's relevant to them, that resonates with them, and then show them in a very
familiar,
you know. Yeah, I mean, you have to draw them in and make them feel like, okay, this is me, this is my life. That's something I would do. I'd hang out with my friends at a party. I want to have a good time. I want to chill out or whatever, and show them how easily those things can be taken away. And it's not meant to scare them in an authoritarian way. It's meant to scare them in a very realistic way. I mean, if you're someone at South Carolina who knows the people who were just killed in the tragic fire last weekend, that's going to resonate you in a really deep way, because you know those people. You may have seen them, you might have just had a class with them, maybe you didn't know them that well, but you see how easy it is in the blink of an eye someone to be gone. So what we are trying to do is create a compelling story that's going to draw people in and level their attitudes a little bit to get them to a place to say, okay, I saw my world shattered in one potential circumstance. How can I make sure that doesn't happen? I mean, that's the goal.
Mm-hmm. Well, we went through quite a few iterations on the script getting it, and one of the things was not only telling the story, but making sure it's obviously technically accurate in terms of the information we're trying to portray. So there's quite a bit involved in putting all that together from the subject matter experts and everything, but then we moved into the actual production, and we just did that, well, I guess it's 2 weeks now.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. You found an excellent location out there and put together quite a cast and crew to really shoot this video.
Yeah, well, it's definitely not just a run-and-gun kind of a YouTube video where you just gather a couple friends together and easily throw a camera on someone's face and shoot. You've got to really plan out a lot of things, especially when you're doing a higher-end video. You know, there's all kinds of producing up front that you have to do. You have to make sure that the way you plan the shoot, because you have to hire lighting people, you have to hire electricians, you have to have stagehands come in, you need a camera operator, you have to have, you know, your sound guy, you're going to hire actors to come in and portray these characters in a way that is believable and real. You know, at one time, you may see Maria, for instance, on the screen, and she's the only person in the shot, and the audience will never realize that, you know, there was 25 people on set with her at the same time, all doing the various pieces of capturing the video and making sure the lighting is right and you can see everything. And what's important to focus the audience's attention on is lit properly, and what you don't want the audience to see is not lit. So it was a very complex coordination of resources, really. You know, we had to make sure everything was accurate technically. When, you know, we had the firefighters there, there were 60 people running around. Everyone needs to know what they need to do and if they're in the right place, and make sure that it's realistic and make sure that it's believable to your audience and that it's still compelling. And it's a tense time, but it's what you've got to do to create the story.
And I was out there for the whole shoot while Kandari was working with the crew and the cast out there, and I have to say I was impressed with the complexity of it, but yet how you managed to pull it all together. And certainly I can tell that it's going to be a story that is, like you said, it's going to be compelling and draw them in. It's a familiar situation. It's a party in a house off campus. The fire breaks out. A number of the people die. And it's the very scenario we just saw down there in North Carolina, unfortunately. It's the one that Dan saw in 1996. It's just a story that keeps repeating itself.
Yeah, we really had a moment here at MediaSauce when the Monday morning after it happened this past Monday, we came in and I mean everyone on the team was just like coming by and going, this really affirms to me that this is a project worth doing. Mm-hmm. Because we're seeing it even as we're working on the production. It's, I mean, we're not just doing this in retrospect or hindsight or anything like that. I mean, we're really trying to save lives.
I mean, it's really tragic that we couldn't have this done a year ago, and maybe these lives would have been saved that we had just seen. You know, we're all very anxious to get it out the door now and to try to avoid these tragedies from happening again.
Yeah.
I'd just kind of like to hop in here real quick, Ed, and say that, you know, a primary focus for this whole project was to come up with a message that would stick, the sticky message, something that will resonate and that will be timeless. And whether or not this will be timeless, I don't know, but I think that we are very hopeful that we have come up with the right message, and it will stick. As Dan said earlier, it is so frustrating because when we have devastating fires like what just occurred and took those beautiful lives from us, the media will focus on it. It's a tragic situation, but in a week it's over.
Right.
It's, and we haven't done any changes.
Yeah.
So hopefully this will.
And while you're there, Sean, maybe you can talk to us a little bit now about, we've got the video production shot and it's going into editing right now, but what happens now? You know, where does this project go?
Well, at this point in time, one of the great things our listeners can do is sign up for pilot site testing. Every one of the To Hell and Back projects, we pride ourselves in this, is it goes through a period of beta testing. So we will be looking for colleges, universities throughout the United States to say, hey, I'm on board, we'll test here. That in and of itself is the most critical part of everything that we do, because that will be our measuring stick as to whether or not we have done what we needed to do. And if we didn't, then we got to go back and make the changes to make sure that we do it right. In every one of the programs, and in the town back to last year, we had fire departments that were signing up left and right saying, can't wait to pilot site test, can't wait. I'm hopeful that the universities will step forward and say, yes, we need this, we want to be a part of it, we want to continue to be a part of it. And so all they have to do is call the foundation at toll-free, 877-814-2024, and say, we would like to be a part of the pilot site testing. It is structured. It's an easy process to go through. We've got about 35 days to complete it, beginning after the first of the year when the students come back. So now's the time to start planning for that.
What you're kind of looking for on the pilot sites, too, is really a diversity of schools so we can get as much feedback from a variety of different people, different expertise, different levels. So it's the sort of thing where if somebody knows nothing about fire safety, you want them as a pilot site, don't you?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No question about it, and thanks for throwing that in there. Yeah, I mean, I don't want just the colleges that have suffered the terrible traumatic circumstances by any means. We want small, we want rural, we want urban, you know. It doesn't make any difference whether you've got 300 students on your small little campus or you've got a half million. It doesn't make any difference if you're Harvard or IUPUI.
Mm-hmm.
Every college campus will have this program in the end. Every single one will be receiving it. So why not step up to the plate right now and say, yeah, we want to be a part of it, and we want to be able to have input into the final product, because that's what pilot site testing is all about, giving us the final input for change.
And why don't you describe a little bit what you provide them for part of this pilot testing? What do they get, and what do they have to do?
For pilot site testing, this program will probably, and once again, after the experts decide, after we pull this thing together, it's normally about a two-hour process. There's pre-testing, there's post-testing, there's evaluations, and then there's a commentary segment for the students and for the deliverers to be able to comment on the actual program. So it's a very methodical and very strategic approach. You're scripted from the beginning of the program to the end of the program. So it's not as though you need to know anything about college campus fire safety. You don't have to know anything. All you have to do is read from the paper. It will say, it will tell you exactly what the program is, exactly what the objectives are, and it will tell you when to pre-test, it will tell you when to post-test, and it will tell you when to open the room for comments. So it's about a two-hour, we're going to guess, for firefighters it ran about 90 minutes. I'm going to say, you know, right now plan on 2 hours for students.
Okay. And we'll have the information on how people can sign up for the, get in touch with the People's Burn Foundation to sign up for the pilot site testing. It'll have both the email, the link, and the phone number there that people can call on the page here below. Okay, Sean, so we've shot the video. You've gone through the pilot testing. What do you do? What's the end product, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
The end product will launch at FDIC this year, where we have launched all of the Tangalong Back programs. And during the week of FDIC, actually on the date of our classroom presentation, we will drop ship 38,000 copies to every fire department and to every college, campus, university, public safety official in the United States. And it's free.
It is free.
Doesn't cost you a thing. The program will come with a toolkit. It will come with a marketing kit so you can show how you're, what you're doing in your community to teach your students college campus fire safety. It will have a component in there for parents that college campus safety officials can use to educate parents. It's a turnkey program. All of the experts on this team have worked and will continue to work extremely hard to make sure that we have crossed every T and dotted every I so that they have every single thing that they need in their hand. So, and it's free. It's funded by Homeland Security. We're very proud of these programs. And I think that you can go to our website, you can go to a lot of different places throughout the country and read about Tangalong Back and the impact that it's made in the fire service. And it can make the same one with the college demographic. We just have to be open to it, and we can't dismiss it. We need to stand up and say, I'm not going to wait for another college student to die. We're going to take the reins right now, and we're going to try and make a difference.
Ed, can I inject something
Sure.
here?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
As a fire protection practitioner, fire chief in a college town, we're on the front line every day. We're extinguishing fires. We're trying to teach fire safety. We're dealing with students. We respond to them when they're in crisis. And we know what the problem is, and we know how to respond to the problem, but we don't always know the best way to try and prevent the problem. And it's so helpful when folks like Sean and Kandari, who have skills that we don't necessarily have in the fire service, step up and take this on as a mission to help us deliver this. And this toolkit that Sean speaks of, I can say from a fire chief's perspective, will just be invaluable to us because it's tools that we can't develop ourselves. And yet we're dealing daily with the problem and the frustration that the problems create. So from the whole fire service and from our poor frustrated hearts, our thanks go out to People's Burn Foundation and Campus Fire Safety and Media Sauce and groups like those who step up and try to help us solve these issues that are so tragic for families. And I think all of you deserve a great deal of credit for stepping in and helping us with this mission and helping us in ways that we would not otherwise be able to achieve.
Thank you, Dan.
Well, thank you. And we're glad to be a part of it because it is such an important mission that there is no single answer for, and it does take a collaborative effort to reach out and pull all these things together to make it happen. So,
and that's what it's all about, Ed. It's really about, you know, it truly is about collaboration, and it truly is about partnership and expanding this beyond our boundaries. And that's what makes everything that we've done so successful, so successful.
These projects are role models for collaboration. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've been talking about the Tangalong Back 3, the college years, is kind of the working title we have for this project that's in process right now. It's going to be a new toolbox and video that's going to be coming out at FDIC in April. And we've been talking with Sean Longrich from the People's Burn Foundation, Dan Jones, Chapel Hill Fire Department, and Kandari O'Connor from Media Sauce. And I really appreciate you guys taking the time out to talk to us, especially, you know, it's just so timely now with what happened there in North Carolina. So I appreciate you taking the time, guys.
Thanks so much. It was good to talk with you.
My pleasure, and I look forward to using Tangalong Back 3.
Okay.
Great. You're on board. You're signed up, Dan.
Absolutely.
Well, my name is Ed Camo. I'm the publisher of Campus Firewatch, and we're here talking on Campus Firewatch Radio on radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for joining us today.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to Firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.